I'm here with Gabby Wong.
Hello.
Hello, Gabby. Right, so as we usually start these interviews with, just talking about your background and how you discovered theatre and Shakespeare and that sort of thing. So,
Well, I was born in Hong Kong and the daughter of a government civil servant of Hong Kong, and was brought up in Hong Kong until I was about 10 years old, and because of my mum's work and also because of the changing political climate in Hong Kong at the time, I got sent away to boarding school at the age of between 12 or 11, and started going to school over here. Didn't speak very much English at the time, but now apparently I've been told I have a posh accent. Did the usual thing of, I did ballet for a very, very long time and did speech and drama at school. Just, those were the things that you just do when you're a kid. You don't think, I'm going to make something out of this. I wasn't like Britney Spears driven or anything like that. It wasn't until I got to university, I was doing politics with economics at university. And got very involved in the student theatre. Was elected as ethical and environmental officer of the student union, as well as I was quite involved in the student theatre. The reason why I got into the student theatre was purely because they had really good sweets at the Freshers' Fair, and I was like, oh, I'm going to join. And then started doing loads of stuff with them. And one of the big issues we had while I was in office was the Nestle ban on campus. And Nestle has very questionable ethics, and but it only becomes an issue when people can't get a bar of Kit Kat in the union shop. And so I decided to make this big awareness day and got a lot of my student theatre people to help along, to do sketches and blah 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 around the campus. And because I am quite politically involved, I think everyone's politically involved, but I think I'm bit more politically aware because that was my degree and that was what my mother did. I just realised in my second year at university, just went, ah, this is a really good way of talking about things with people. And that's when I went, theatre is a really, really powerful tool. Still didn't think that that would be my career or anything. I was going to go into broadcast journalism and all of that stuff. Went to see at the Theatre Royal Bath the Peter Hall season in 2003, and I was about to graduate from university, and saw As You Like It with Rebecca Hall as Rosalind. I thought she was wonderful and she was amazing, and it was As You Like It that wasn't, You expected it to be a comedy, but it was really, really heartbreaking, and she was particularly amazing. The next day I was like, right, I'm applying to drama school. If that woman can do that to me while I'm in the audience, I want to be able to affect it, people, by being on stage as well, if I can do what she can do. So, yeah, so, as they say, the rest is history.
Where did you go to uni?
I went to Bath University. So, yeah, beautiful town.
Yeah.
But very small. So when I moved to London to go train to be an actress, that was a bit of a shock.
Yes, but it would be. Where did you train?
I went to Italia Conti, the BA Honours, 3 years acting course. I loved it. It was they were very ensemble based. Everything was about the text and movement and voice and everything, which is something that I hadn't realised at all.
Right.
But I think it was at drama school that I was made aware of my race a lot more than previously. Because before I was just going at school, I was never bullied for my race or anything.
Yeah.
Actually, even to a point where there were other Chinese girls in the school that quite rudely called me the banana, yellow on the outside, white on the inside, and all of that, which is horrible. But I never kind of went, oh, I'm Chinese and I feel very blah blah blah,
yeah,
downtrodden and oppressed because I'm quite mouthy. But when I went to drama school, it was a bit of a rude awakening, because when you're at drama school, people always try to get the truth out of you. You have to be truthful and all of that, which is very, very important. And I think the work that I try to do now is always to that. But then when they try to get the truth out of me, in inverted commas,
yeah.
It's like, do it a little bit like your mother. I was like, oh, what do you mean? Annoying and judgmental? No, like, you know, how would she talk? And I was like, ah, you want me to do a Chinese accent? I can do a Chinese accent, but I don't see how this is any part of Edward Bond, the great piece. But, okay. And then they're like, oh, that was funny, that was blah, blah, blah. I was like, is it funny because I was doing an accent? Or was it funny because I actually found the truth in it? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I guess that was a process. So, yeah.
Did you encounter that all the way through training? Or was it just specific pieces?
Specific pieces. Not so much when it's contemporary stuff. I mean, actually, Edward Bond is quite contemporary.
Yeah.
But...
Which Bond was it?
The Great Peace. So, yeah, I was the woman who wandered around the wilderness. And so she went a bit mad and started having a Chinese accent. And I was like, okay. I could quite easily be a mad Newcastle person. I can quite easily be a mad Mancunian, but no.
Yeah. Interesting.
But that was so much... That was probably my first year, and I have to put it down to I couldn't find my way and they couldn't find a way of how to train me specifically, because they are very good at honing in on individuals. So I think that was just a one-off, that they were trying something out, and I guess that was the moment when I went, how I look actually really matters in this industry, doesn't it? So
it does.
And what I represent.
Doesn't matter who you are either.
Yeah.
It comes very much down to looks.
Mm.
So for the rest of the other 2 years, was there anything similar? Or
not so much. In our second year, and actually I'm quite proud of this, we mounted our own shows to take to Edinburgh, the fundraise and everything. So it's the whole proactive thing, and I was in Carol Churchill's Cloud Nine, where everything, like, yes, anything goes. So, which is brilliant. But specifically, when it came to third year, where they have to present you in your castability in the industry, the majority of the non-white students in my year were in one play that was originally done at Talawa, and the rest of the year were doing restoration. And I wasn't doing restoration, I was in the other play, which was in itself a very, very good play.
Yeah, which play was that?
It's called Under the Influence, by Wayne Buchanan, about the psychological constraints and on the black community.
Uh-huh.
And I play the psychologist who tries to take it out of her, who was originally written for a black woman.
Now, did you just have the one showcase? Or was it all year, like it is at some places like Rada and Lambda?
We did two big productions, mm-hmm. and then one showcase at the end of the year. So,
Any of those Shakespeare?
No. Shakespeare was our second year project.
Ah, right. So what did you do in that?
Are we in the theatre? I was at Lady Anne.
Okay.
So that was brilliant. I loved it. Because I was like, I'm going to be one of the witches, aren't I?
Yeah.
But because I am mouthy and assertive, they were just like, they have Lady Anne in you, so why don't you do Lady Anne? So that was wonderful, because we did it site specific as well.
Oh yeah, what kind of site specific?
We did it in our building.
Yeah.
But because our building had five levels, one group did Midsummer Night's Dream at the top, where it's all very light, and we did Macbeth down at the bottom of the basement, and you had to go through loads of corridors, which was, I thought it was brilliant. and set it in the 20s.
Oh, right.
Which was lovely, so I got to wear, like, nice dresses.
They have great dresses. Mm. Yeah. So was that the first time you'd done Shakespeare?
Yes, it was. Yeah, so first role was Lady M. Granted, at drama school, but still.
Yeah, but still.
Still
pretty big.
Big.
So what kind of, what was your take on her?
I would love to play her again.
Yeah.
And when I came out of drama school, when I first met an agent, she asked me, where do you see yourself going in your career? And without hesitation, I was like, yep, Lady M at the RSC. And then she just went, I don't really see you as classical. Which I think was her way of thinking, classical plays don't tend to have people like you.
Yeah.
And I was like,
that's
okay.
That's the dog whistle code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't sign with her.
No. So I was going to ask.
Mm.
So what do you think you learned, looking back on it, what do you think you learned by doing it? Just, well, because you were thrown in at the deep end with that.
Yeah.
Really.
I mean, when you're at drama school, you're always being taught technique, so you are being taught the textual analysis of it and how brilliant Shakespeare is. Actually, really, really brilliant, to the point where everyone doubled up and the timing of one person would be who would be up at the Juliet balcony would then have to double up as somebody else coming up from the trap, and he timed it perfectly for the globe, how long they would have to take to go down to get changed and come back up, put on a different hat, and just learnt that kind of thing. It still happens now, the San Wanamaker Festival. I think we were one of the very first years that did it.
Yeah.
And our school was, they didn't just pick people, they auditioned, people signed up to say, I want to do this. And they auditioned you and paired you up, and I didn't get to do it. I was very upset at the time, but I also sort of realised, when I saw my two friends doing it on that Globe stage, I was like, this is amazing, they're great.
Yeah.
And when you're at the Globe, you can't be all like, I'm doing theatre, all in myself. You have to go out, you have to play with the crowds, and they were wonderful. And so I think what I did learn, going from doing Macbeth and seeing my two very great friends doing Much Ado on that stage for the San Juan and Pica Festival, was you can do so much about technique and text, but if you don't actually understand where they're coming from and what they're saying, there's no point. There's absolutely no point.
Yeah.
So
I think, I might be wrong about this, but I think your one and only Shakespeare professionally so far was Othello on the Globe stage.
On the Globe stage.
Yeah.
It was also my first job.
It was your first job?
It was my first job.
Wow. So do you want to, can you run through how that, you think it happened? Obviously the audition and that kind of thing, but you know.
I have to start by saying I wasn't a part in it. I was part of the ensemble.
Yeah.
And I don't really know exactly how it happened, because I was still at drama school. Mm-hmm. I hadn't graduated. We were about to choose all our pieces for showcase. And I got a call from Spotlight. I hadn't even had an agent. And said, Spotlight just said, Wilson My Lamb wants to meet you. Who is Wilson My Lamb? Googled him. Oh, he's won some Olivier's. So, okay. Went to meet him. I was like, where am I meeting him? You're meeting him at the Globe. Okay. Realised that he'd been rehearsing with the main cast for the best part of 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And said, I need more people. And I need someone who would, you know, roll up their sleeves and do stuff. And I met him, had a really lovely chat, didn't hear anything, got asked to go back in again to read Desdemona.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, but you already have Zoe Tepper as your Desdemona. I don't understand this. And And it was one of those things where he just really wanted to bring me in for something, but didn't know what.
Right.
But then I did that show along with my showcase at the time, so rehearsing for showcase and going to the Globe, jumping in the week before they started teching. First professional job, rabbits in headlights, no idea what was going on, running around, got put into a corset, got put into some singlets, had two lines off stage, but still great because, again, the Globe is another place where they really value ensemble work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I thought on the whole was a very good production because the women, apart from Desdemona, were all non-white.
Right.
So there, Amelia wasn't white, there, Bianca wasn't white,
yeah.
And the bar wench, me, wasn't white. So that.
Do you know why? Why he did that?
I think he wanted to present a tension, that racial tension that's permeated throughout the whole of that world rather than just being one person.
Yeah.
And Othello is an outsider, but as much as Iago is an outsider.
Yeah.
So, and to present Iago being the racist that he is.
Yeah.
Interpreted
most of the time,
straight down narrow. But to have a wife who's mixed race.
Yeah.
What does that say?
Yeah.
It's like people who kind of like, can't call me racist, my wife's Thai. But
yeah.
Spew out a lot of racist things. And it's like, it's quite, psychologically, it's quite interesting.
Yeah. Well, I was having a conversation actually this morning with a friend of mine, and debating the term racism, and she was talking about that in terms of power.
Yes.
And that's exactly it, what you've just described in the, you know, yeah. white man with the Thai wife mm-hmm. going, I'm not a racist, and yet spewing out all kinds of things. So that's, I mean, I think that's interesting for Othello. Yeah.
And that's what racism is. It is just power. The power structure.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to somebody in the cast. She genuinely asked me, so Gabby, when someone does a Chinese accent to you, that's racist. Yes. What if, you know, someone does a Welsh accent to me, is that racist? And I was like, well, actually, if it's an English person doing that to a Welsh person, a bit, actually. If it's an English person doing that to a Scottish person, it's a bit. But when you say white oppression, it's about the system that's been put in place.
Yeah.
Like the prison system, what we've seen happen to Sandra Bland, and all of that, that kind of thing. Maybe we need to find a better term than just white.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the moment, that's the most gut-wrenching, powerful thing we can say.
Yeah, so, yeah. So what else about that production do you remember?
This is what I remember the most. It was Eamon Walker was playing Othello.
Yeah.
Who is this massive tower of man. And I was still choosing my monologues and stuff for my showcase. Went to Waterstones, bought my monologues for coloured actors to go, right, is there anything that's specific for me?
Yeah.
Because I've got to sell myself. And he literally yanked the book out of my hand and said, you don't need that. You don't need to make a reference. And I was like, but I have to. I have to think of this as a business. It's like, yeah, your talent is already your business, not your race. You don't need that. I still have that book.
Yeah.
But
were there any classical pieces in there, out of curiosity?
None at all.
And so were they, are they, I mean, I'm sure we can all look it up in a bookshop, but I'm guessing they're modern pieces by Black and Asian playwrights.
Yeah, who are writing things for themselves rather than waiting for someone to think of them as Lady M.
Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So anything else that you remember about the production?
I think what was really great about Eamon, because he's such a big mountain of a man, and he just killed Desdemona, who is tiny and white, and everyone's like, oh my god, and it's horrible, his strength, and the threat of the outsider. But when he breaks down and kills himself,
yeah,
and realizes that he's been put in a situation, not only has he killed the love of his life, it's when he realizes that he is now no longer in a position of power. He was in power because of his physical strength, and that was his merit, but not because of anything else. And that he can so easily be put down by Iago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or the rest of the rest of the society that he was in.
So what was No, you've said your two lines were off stage, so in a way the technique of the globe is not going to be something you're familiar with, but what was it like having your first job on that, what is an iconic stage, really?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. You always think that you have to be really, really big with your voice, and some people's voices suffered.
Yeah.
On rainy days, you think, oh, I have to battle the rain.
Yeah.
The rain's actually helping you because it's actually putting in, like, sort of like cocooning all the sound. And I remember going, oh, I can hear the difference. That's amazing. And something that, because we had, Patsy Rodenberg come in to do some voice stuff with us. Even though I only had two lines, I was like, I'm going to go and have a session with Patsy. She was like, just look up, it will help.
Ah.
And it always does. Not to the point where you constrict your neck, but just look up. Because it's with the singing as well. You sing from your forehead.
Mm.
You might go sharp, but that's easier to correct than being flat.
Right.
So that was... Because if it's something big, you can always bring it back down. Don't have to shout.
No.
Yeah. Because your voice will tire.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so your first job was in classical theatre, and here we are, 7-8 years later?
Yeah.
2015, at the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Yeah.
What did you do in the between times? That job and this one?
I mainly stayed with theatre.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is new work, and actually doing R&D for new work, where they specifically want Chinese actresses or Chinese actors. And most of my work has been race specific, some of them good, some of them not. Some of them has been enlightening, some of them has just been another job.
Yeah.
Some of it was above a pub, some of it was funded by the Arts Council.
What do you think was the most engaging one or ones for you out of that work? What sorts of things?
There were two projects that I I get quite emotional about. Is the first one was Stockholm, which was originally done by Frantic Assembly as a two-hander about a couple and their dysfunctional relationship behind doors, but awesome image to the outside. That project was, there was one day me and my best friend, who is a 6'4" tall ginger man, just having a drink, and I said, I am so tired of going in for castings for revolutionary Chinese person or evil but submissive lotus flower dragon lady, or those lazy stereotypes. And he went, I'm so sick of going in for ginger weirdos. And we just literally looked at each other and went, shall we make something together? And we found this script. I'd seen it before, and I love Frantic Assembly. and we just got the money together, got a team together, put it on. That was one of the best things I did. I got incredibly physically fit because it was quite heavily movement based, also found the love of my life, who is that tall ginger weirdo. The other one was, it was done this time last year, it was a new piece of writing about the original Chinatown in Limehouse in London. The original Chinatown, which is always very mythically presented as the opium den, and people had silly hats and silly moustaches and everything. And if you look at the 1920s BBC documentary, they would be panning out on these inscrutable Chinese people in East London. They were just Chinese people hanging out washing, but they were inscrutable. I don't know why, but they were. And so when a lot of plays, when they go and talk about the Chinese culture, there's always a white guy there, and sort of probably with an American accent, and just go in and go, "What's going on here?" and try to find out. But it's a, really the protagonist is the male, white male. But this project that we did was about the lives of ordinary people in Limehouse. The dramaticness of it, the drama of it all is that Limehouse is being sort of flattened to the ground for slum clearances because it was a slum.
Yeah.
And it was about people's tie to a community or people's needs for progress.
Yeah.
So there was a big sort of push and pull effect in that play, and I loved it. And I played a heavily pregnant woman who gave birth on stage, then subsequently played her daughter and her granddaughter. So I got to be different people, but they're sort of the same.
Yeah, the linkage.
Yeah, the linkage and everything. Yeah. And it was quite heartbreaking sometimes when I was doing that play. And my character, who was based on very loosely based on an actual couple, who lived in that area from the 30s till the late 50s, and the play was set in the late 50s, came to watch that show. She was 94 at the time.
Oh my.
And I spoke to her, and it was like, oh my God, this is really emotional. This is really, really emotional. And I'm really proud of that show.
Yeah. What was the show called?
It was called Last Days of Limehouse. And that show, the casting director of the RSC, Hannah,
right,
came to see it.
Okay.
And then 3 weeks later, she asked me to audition for the RSC.
Okay.
So, because she saw a person rather than maybe just...
A stereotype.
Which I think that's one of the problems, because you don't get to be on the RSC's radar unless you've done a certain type of work.
Yeah.
And people are quite unwilling to... or just not aware to put actors of a certain type into those situations, because if there was a very, very pretty girl and a fatter girl, who would they want to be Juliet? Even though both are vulnerable, both are strong in their way to be Juliet, but it would always go one way.
Yeah.
Because then they would only see stereotypes, because you're not willing to break the stereotype.
That's part of the problem with casting overall, is it's very much stereotyped, isn't it? Before we get on to the RSC, though, I wanted to ask if in that time between Othello and now, anybody had put you up for any classical work?
Not my old agent. My new agent, yes.
Okay.
Although I put myself up for a... this might make you a bit angry, actually, this story. someone put me up... someone was doing a profit share of Midsummer Night's Dream, I wasn't working at the time, I was working at a bookstore at the time, so I was like, right, why not? I'm short. I can be Hermia.
Yes.
So I put myself up for Hermia. The director, who I will not name, said, that was wonderful, offered me the job on the spot, and then said, well, the lovers usually double up as the mechanicals. And I was like, yeah, of course they do. Laugh, laugh, laugh from him. You can be the chink in the wall.
Oh.
And I just went, I'm sorry. Sorry, that was a joke. And I was like, I don't find it very funny, and I don't think I want to work for you, so no thank you. And I walked away. I haven't heard of him working anywhere else since, but I just thought that was absolutely awful. And this was in 2011.
Wow.
But going back to,
yeah,
has anyone put me up for classical roles? My current agent amazingly put me up as Benvolio in Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
And I was like,
Where would that have been?
I can't actually remember, but it was somewhere obscure. But she was like, I don't care. You can fight.
Yeah.
Why can't Benvolio be a woman? There isn't... Is there anything in the script that says Benvolio has to be a man?
No, it's just implied.
It's implied,
yeah.
But...
No, in this day and age, I mean, that's the other problem that you've got in classical theatre as yourself. It isn't just your race, it's your gender.
Yes. Yes, very much so. Yeah.
So how long have you been with this new agent, then?
Just under 2 years.
Mm.
Just under 2 years.
Well, because one of the things that's very interesting, because one of the things that I'm interested in is the fact that one of the people that I know that's a theatre manager in a regional theatre, they try to get... you know, black actors, Asian actors, they try to get a diverse cast together, but when they send out castings, no agent puts forth anyone that they, you know, any there's no diversity in what agents are putting forth. So it's interesting that there is at least one agent out there willing to put you up for Benvolio.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's, you know, that's, I think that's one of the things it'll take.
Someone, just one person.
Yeah.
Because I remember feeling quite unhappy with my old agent. I was with him for a while, and he was wonderful on so many levels, but I don't think we... Sounds like a horrible breakup, but I don't think we wanted the same thing.
Yeah.
He wanted me to be in big, big movies, to be the...
Well, you were...
Asian sidekick.
You would earn him a lot more money.
Yeah. But I probably wouldn't have been that happy.
No.
But this agent, when I met with her and asked, have you got anybody like me on your books? Subtext, is there another Chinese girl on your books?
Yeah.
You know, will your attention be divided? And she was like, yeah, I do. But, you know, can you imagine if a white actress asked me that? Of course there would be.
Yeah.
And she's a different bracket. She is younger and she does more musical theatre, so you won't clash. And so what if you do clash? I'm like, yeah, okay, you actually get me. And my agency is entirely, not entirely, there is two guys in it, but it's headed by women, so
right.
That made me feel so much more comfortable.
Yeah,
because
even though you might get stereotyped, you're not going to get stereotyped in the same way that you obviously had been elsewhere.
Yeah.
And by other people. Yeah, that's interesting. Right, so Hannah came and saw you.
Yes.
In the Limehouse gig.
Yeah.
So what was the process like for getting this RSC job?
I'm quite proactive and I probably have to say sorry, Hannah, for stalking you for so long. But actors do write to casting directors.
Yes, yeah, it's part of the business.
Yeah, and some casting directors really like it because they think that you are being proactive.
Yeah.
And I kept in touch with her. I met her in an open audition sort of situation, which I will go into later.
Okay.
And then since then, have kept in touch with her. I auditioned and got onto the Pole event, which is a two-day free classical training at the National Theatre and Central School of Drama, Speech and Drama. Sorry, Royal Central School.
Yes, it's now whatever it is.
It's all Royal now.
It's all Royal.
But it's 2 days free. So if any young actors are listening to this, apply for the Pole event. It's great. And they audition people and they pick 12 people to do it. And then when I did that, and I emailed her and said, I've just got onto this, it'll be great. I'll be working with Jeanette Winterson, Barbara Houseman, Tim West, people like that. We do duologues at the end of the day if you want to come and watch it. Knowing she probably won't be able to make it, but just to say,
yeah,
I'm continuing to train.
Yeah,
I'm continuing to broaden my knowledge about classical text. And then invited her to everything and really pushed for her to come to see Limehouse because I knew that I was around.
It was good work.
Yeah, it was good work.
Yeah.
It wasn't perfect, but it was good work.
Yeah.
And she did. And then afterwards I just sent her an email saying, well, I can see that, you know, Mad World is coming round again.
Yeah.
Mad World set in 1956 Soho and Limehouse was set in 1958 Limehouse. So it'd be great to go from the East End to the West End, blah, 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 and like made a little joke. And she didn't have to, but she replied saying, we've offered it to the original cast, but I will keep you in mind for other things.
Yeah.
And then a couple of weeks later, they released the new season. And I saw Justin Alderberg's name on there. I've worked with Justin before.
Ah, right.
And I said, it would be great to be there for Justin's debut season.
Yeah.
Got called in to meet Matthew Dunster. Read for The Part of Julia in Love Sacrifice. And it was within hours of meeting Matthew that I got a call to say, you've got a recall. Great. My recall was with Trevor Nunn, and my brief was, they don't know how to place you, so bring a monologue.
Place you in the whole season, or?
In that play.
In Volpone.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Because if they couldn't place one person in one play, because some people are just doing two, people are just doing one. Majority of us are doing all three, but
yeah. They prefer it that way.
Yeah, they prefer it.
Economically,
that way.
It makes much more sense for them.
Exactly.
Exhausts all of you, but
great. so they couldn't place me. They don't know where to place me, but bring a monologue. I read Volpone and to say I didn't understand it the first time I read it.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think I understood it until about like third week into rehearsals, because it's really, really dense. It's so zigzagging.
It's a satire.
Yeah.
Of the time.
Yeah.
And so it's yeah.
Yeah. Unless you get all the unless you get all the jokes of the time, you'd probably be like really confused. And I was. So I didn't know what to do. And I was like, oh, what do I bring? What have I got in my repertoire that I can just go through in one day and refresh myself? And I went, oh, sod it. I'm going to do Queen Catherine from Henry VIII. I know I'm probably about 10 years too young to play her, but I'm just going to do it. A very shortened version of her trial speech, because that's really long. And I did that. I first had a chat with Trevor first, and then met Trevor, and he was like, right, shall we get to it? Yes, yes. And I was like, yeah, sure. dinner on it. And I was like, oh, excellent, very strong, great, yes. And he brought me a chair. And I was like, oh, shall I sit on the chair?
No, lean all your weight onto the chair. Just all of your strength.
And then I did.
Now do it again.
Did the monologue. Because my strength was all there.
Yeah.
I think my physical, emotional, and probably vocal strength just sort of fell apart a little bit.
Yeah.
And, just started crying. And I was like, that's why you're Trevor Nunn. Because you know how to manipulate people. I think he wanted to see the vulnerable side of me.
Yeah.
Now that I know what the play is about.
Yes.
And that I did end up understudying Celia.
Right.
Who is a very vulnerable character.
Very much so.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
So I wasn't quite vulnerable enough for him at that point. But I was vulnerable enough to get into the company.
And to understudy vulnerable.
Yeah.
So you'd worked with Justin before.
Yes.
So he was probably the key.
Yeah, I think he was. We worked together very, very, very interestingly when the whole Orphan of Zhao thing happened.
Ah, right.
And we had many... It was a very, very, only a sort of a week-long project that we did together, but we had many chats during that time. That might have changed things a little bit for my sector.
I think it probably did.
Not massively, but it's there.
I mean, what they, from my point of view, what they did was the job they needed to do, which was a lobbying group to raise awareness. I think some of the logic, if you take it to its extreme, becomes only, if only Chinese people can be in Orphan of Zhao, only white people can be in Hamlet.
Mm.
But that, I might cut that bit out, actually, of this recording, because don't want that on the record anywhere. But I think that's what they needed to do.
Yeah, and knowing what I know now, having been in this environment, I think my initial reaction was indignance, because because they're being cross-cast in all three plays, as we have done this season as well. No, you can't have an all-Chinese cast. And it probably wouldn't have served... It wouldn't have advanced things, actually, because it would have just been like, guys, we're going to do this token thing. And that would have been as damaging as not having any Chinese people in it at all.
Yeah.
The fact that they had three actors of East Asian descent in it was already a testament of, you know, what they were trying to do. But I've spoken to Greg about it since.
Have you?
Yeah, and he didn't... He just wanted to put on a good play, and I have read it, and it is a good play.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to see it, but I think what should have... No, I'm not going to tell them what to do at all, because it's not my place. I would have been much more happy if the lead was somebody of East Asian descent.
What do you think you would have felt had you been in that company? Had you actually been, if this is completely an irrelevant question in a way, but it's also kind of, at the time you were having the discussions with Justin, you're probably thinking, what would I have done had I been in there?
It can be no idea, but I can tell you, being the only East Asian female in this company, why is it just me?
Yeah.
I can feel that.
Yeah.
And sometimes you think, I think that I do know the three actors in the Orphan of Shell.
Mm.
I think they were put into a very impossible position as well.
Mm.
And I think because the anger that came out of it was so strong and on a level unwarrantedly personal, that a lot of people felt it was a personal attack, and I don't think it should have been a personal attack. And I certainly didn't personally attack anybody. But I think that conversation need to have been put into the collective consciousness to go, okay, yeah, people were seen for it. And maybe on a selfish level, why wasn't I seen for it? No, my CV does not warrant me an RSC audition. It didn't at the time. But at the same time, why didn't my CV?
Which is probably the more crucial question in many ways.
And it wasn't RSC's fault. It wasn't Greg's fault. It wasn't any particular person's fault. It's just how it's been constructed. And our world, the theatre world, really reflects society. And sometimes, if someone is brave enough, they will challenge. Actually, theatre makers would probably have a responsibility to go, hey, how about this?
Yeah.
How about a black Iago?
Yeah.
That says something different about the play than just white man racist towards black man. How about that? And, you know, as with lots of organisations, they succeed in some ways and they might disappoint in some ways. But if it wasn't for that debacle, the whole thing, I don't think I would be here. But because the handling of the aftermath, I thought, how dignified, actually, the RSC was. There was a pressure group that happened, there was an open event that happened, and they were labelled the gatekeepers, and people were very angry, rightly so, but anger sometimes doesn't help with discussion.
No.
And then we came out and went, right, well, yeah, you're right. Your CVs don't warrant you an RSC audition. Why doesn't your CV warrant you an RSC audition? Because you've been playing Japanese businessmen here and Chinese prostitute over there. That's not a substantial CV. But we recognise that's a social construct that has been stamped on your CV, actually. Mm-hmm. So apply through Equity. We will meet with 30 East Asian actors. And not just the RSC, the National, Regent's Park, Manchester Royal Exchange. It became an industry wide, opened up, and the event was called Opening the Doors, but they opened their doors and welcomed people. And you have to, as any actors, be proactive about it. So I was like, right, I'm applying. Met Hannah, got really, really well with Hannah. Didn't do my Queen of Catherine speech, did my Portia speech. And she was, you know, you could see that she just wants to help you get the job, because that will make her job so much easier. Then she will have to fight with all the putting people in all three plays in a season or whatever. But that part will be made so much easier for her. So I think the aftermath of how they handled that was great. And I think with more pressure groups, and Lenny Henry having that big speech, more theatres need to recognise that you don't see so much actors from the minority doing leading roles is because something in your head hasn't been quite connected like that. And if you do see people who have got talent or can be nurtured, then that's a great thing.
Yeah. There was, I talked to David Thacker last week, and he told me about, well, he told me a bunch of things. You can listen to the tape. But what you said about being the only East Asian woman reminded me that he said when he did Two Gentlemen of Verona here in 1991, and he cast Josette Buschel-Mingo as Lucetta, and then she stepped up in London to play Sylvia. But she got back from her first all-company meeting and said, I'm the only black woman.
Mm.
And that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's over 20 years ago now.
Well, in terms of diversity, in the ticking boxes sense,
yeah,
our company has made it.
Oh, definitely.
Very, very diverse. And I think part of it is because I've worked with Justin, and other actors have worked with Matthew. And then there are definitely actors who have worked with Trevor.
Yeah.
So each director has kind of brought people they trust in. You still have to audition. It's not handed you to you on a plate, but you still have to audition.
Yeah.
But sometimes I find it quite uncomfortable that as a woman of colour, I am sometimes virtually voiceless on stage. And that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I should be Lady M now, because everybody who comes into the RSC has to pay their dues, and I'm paying my dues now.
Yes.
And I'm learning loads. And
although there is Desdemona straight out of drama school.
Desdemona. Oh, I didn't play Desdemona then.
No. But this current Desdemona is straight out of drama school, so she's not had to pay her dues.
But she is fantastic.
So not everyone
has
to pay their
dues,
I think is my point.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can see that point.
But you were saying about being virtually voiceless.
Sometimes it makes me uncomfortable.
Mm.
I remember somebody saying, Talawar's doing All My Sons.
Yeah.
The old black, mm-hmm. All My Sons.
Yeah.
And someone just went, there were comments on their website, it was Manchester Royal Exchange. Why is it all black? Is this one of those gimmicks again? But why don't we question it when it's all white? So I always question it when it's all white.
Mm.
We have to.
Yes.
Otherwise, there isn't diversity.
Yeah.
And yeah, until you make diversity not a thing by doing it, by ignoring it, it's just going to make it worse.
Yeah. And, I mean, speaking about Talawar, being all black, I had a conversation with someone a few months ago who used to train actors, and came up with the, you know, naturalism, like it, you know, that they wouldn't be all black. And it took David Thacker reminding me about Arthur Miller's experience in Beijing when he was saying, no, you don't have to be American, just be Chinese, just do the play.
Yeah.
So there's...
It happens everywhere as well.
It does, yeah.
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 And sadly, and I have to say this, back home in Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
if you use a white model, you will sell more things.
Really?
Yeah, you probably will sell... If it's luxury apartments, it will probably be a white businessman with a very pretty Eurasian wife. But if it's local apartments, not luxury expat things, then it, you know, there's that sort of like how much someone's looks are worth, what can you sell? And it's well, you know, it was colonized, so
yeah. Do you think that operates on mainland China in that way, or
probably not so,
so much.
Not so much. But very many starlets are... I don't know, you know, this is from gossip thing, but, you know, looking at pictures, people are making, having surgeries to look, in inverted commas, more white.
Yes.
Whitening skin products. I think that's a more class thing rather than a race thing, but, you know, the Victorian ideals of if you work in the sun, then you must be of a lower class, so if you're white as porcelain, then you're upper class.
And
that's the kind of thing that happens over in Asia at the moment.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's funny. Going back to what you said about 20 years ago, an actress said she was the only black woman in the company. I remember talking to another... I go to a lot of these events. This was one of the improbable race discussions. Mm-hmm. And I ended up in a little group discussing about race-specific roles. And someone was talking about how whether, you know, they should have African dancing and drama school as part of the thing because black actresses will come out and do those parts and they don't have that skill and blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, well, I don't want to do kung fu at drama school because I will come out having to be the kick-ass Chinese girl. And we were having a discussion and then I realised how much the black and South Asian sector, they probably would want a bit more of that because their progress is actually about 30 years ahead of my sector.
It is, yeah.
That those roles that require them to do race-specific stuff also make them human. They are actually rounded characters, whereas if I am just kicking ass doing taekwondo, I will just be the girl who kicks ass and does taekwondo.
Yeah.
Not someone who has the capacity to love and cry and fart. Just, you know, being human.
So, Gabby, your goal is to fart on stage. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. And it's also, I'm sure, it's also much more difficult for women because there is... not just the racial stereotype, there's the gender stereotype.
Yeah.
And the gender and the race stereotype are combined, are a tragic nightmare.
Yeah.
Of, okay, you might get to be kick-ass, but then most of the time you have to be subservient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, very sexually available as well.
I forgot that. Yeah.
Come on.
Sorry.
Subservient, sexually available, and... cry with a single tear.
Just the one down the face.
Just one down the face.
Okay, so if anyone's writing these parts, stop it. So how, just I guess briefly, you know, how have you found being here, having to be a workaholic? But how, you know, what's that brought, even though it isn't Shakespeare? How has that, helped?
It has helped. And the thing is, I was reading Harriet Walter's book.
Mm.
And then on the first opening night when she said, good luck, darling, to me, I was like, Harriet Walter, just think about it. And she said, the more you do something, as with anything, the more you do it, the better you get at it. I'm tired, but I feel like my stamina is probably slightly superhuman at the moment.
Probably.
I've learned to... when you get lost, and this is something our voice support lady told me, when you get lost, just go back to the text. It will help you. Because... okay, they're not Shakespeare.
No.
But they were still geniuses.
Yeah.
they supported and influenced Shakespeare, as Shakespeare supported and influenced them.
Yeah.
I've learnt what it's like to play on a velvet floor that's absolutely dark and everything's just dark and you can't really see a way past the vom. And, but you get the support to learn to train your voice to where you resonate to,
yeah.
And to overcome that acoustic difficulty. I've learned that the real superhumans of the RSC are probably the crew.
Yeah.
Way past, we've come off stage, got out of our corsets and gone to the duck. They're there changing over increasingly difficult and complicated set on the Swan stage. And I think because they know how hard you work, the RSC is, I've yeah. never been so well looked after
right.
on a job before. It amazes me how brilliant everyone is. Everyone is sort of like, I'm here for a season, but you do this all the time.
Yeah.
The wardrobe department. So organised. Like the OCD in me gets excited every time they bring out a colour-coded Gantt chart of how many seconds they have to change each person and who they have available. And I'm just like, I'm astounded by this.
And the understudying, because I mean, your roles have been minimal. But the understudying, you've done
all three.
Yeah. And you've done what? Has it been fairly major roles in all three of
yeah.
them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, apart from Jew of Malta.
Yeah.
But even so.
And you've gone on in Love Sacrifice, haven't you?
I have. Yeah. I have. That was a walk in the park compared to the understudy run, because in the understudy run I was three different people, so I was talking to myself on stage as three different people.
Yes.
Whereas when I did have to go on, I was just one person. Yeah. I was like, this is so easy.
Yes, that's one of the humorous things about the RSC understudy run, yeah. it has to be said, is you wait for the time when someone is going to have to talk to themselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, so okay, walk in the park as far as...
Going on. I think because the three parts I understudied in Love Sacrifice were, they weren't massive, but they were strong women.
Yeah.
They were so strong, and I think... For myself, I connected with that play the most.
Yeah.
And that was great. And the language was surprisingly incredibly modern.
Yeah, for Love Sacrifice.
For Love Sacrifice.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
I loved it. I really, really liked those three parts that I understudied. It was during rehearsals while we were still in London, Sheila, who plays Julia, lost her voice. And on that day, we were doing a run. On that day, they just went, Sheila will do the tracks and you just do the lines. And it was like live ADRing. Uh-huh. I was just watching when she was about to breathe to be the next person. I was like, okay, that's what it's doing. And that really helped.
Yeah.
But in terms of the fact that they did trust me enough to say, why don't you do this? Really, really helped. And you get a chance to do it because for understudy, you don't have that much time.
Yeah.
You really don't have that much time
yeah.
to do it. And you try not to be a carbon copy of how they're doing it on stage, but at the same time you have to honour the work they've done.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay, so why don't we wrap up with one final question, which is out of the classical canon, apart apart from Lady M, because we've gone through that, what else would you like to do?
All of them.
okay, all right.
Hamlet. Mm. You want to play Hamlet?
Yeah.
Why be cliche and go for Juliet? Why not Hamlet?
Why Hamlet?
The psychology of that character is so complex, and I might go mad, and as he does. But that challenge, to be given that challenge and have no reference to my race or my gender, would be absolutely great. So, yeah.
Okay. Hamlet, it is then. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.